U.S. Representative Paul Ryan came under fire this week after commenting on the lack of a culture to work in America's inner cities. Appearing on Bill Bennett's Morning in America show on Wednesday, Ryan responded to a question about what Bennett called the fatherless problem. Let's listen to what Representative Ryan had to say.
We have got this tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular, of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work. And so there's a real culture problem here that has to be dealt with.
That particular comment has garnered a lot of talk and a lot of discussion. And with us today is William Jones, professor of history at UW-Madison, focusing on race, class, and work. And he's here not just to reflect on Representative Ryan's comments, but to also help us understand some of the real barriers to ending inner-city poverty. Will, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, first thing, as I mentioned, there has been quite a reaction to this comment. Representative Barbara Lee from California sees the remarks as what she called a thinly veiled racial attack here in Wisconsin. U.S. Representative Gwen Moore said she agreed with Ryan to the extent that poverty is caused by a culture of inequality, but she says she sees that culture slightly differently from Representative Ryan. When you first heard this, what was your reaction to it? Did you ears perk up the same way theirs did?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind the context in which he was making these statements, and it was in the release of a report that was it was framed as a review of the success of the war on poverty after 50 years, and the conclusion or the tone of that report was repeatedly the assertion that the war on poverty had been a failure, that it had not addressed the problem of poverty or solved the problem of poverty. And so the report was premised on the idea that there needed to be a new way of looking at how to address poverty. And in Ryan's view, that was looking at this, what he identifies as a cultural problem of men not working, of generations out of work, of people who have lost touch with the value and the culture of work. So I think that's the context in which I viewed it, and I think it was the context in which we see that very strong reaction, both on the grounds of him sort of singling out African Americans, which was Boxer's point, saying referring to the inner city was a sort of coded way for referring specifically to African Americans, and then also of Representative Moore saying this ignores the real broad structural barriers to people in inner cities getting full-time employment and decent jobs.
In Representative Ryan's defense yesterday, he has since said that his comments were inarticulate and that they weren't about race. And what he was really trying to say is that it's a larger societal problem and that we've allowed society to segregate, isolate the poor into different places like the inner city. Is that something that you agree with?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to take him seriously and to argue on his basic point, which I think we can interpret. We can go back and forth about what he meant by inner city, whether he was sort of using coded words for race. But I think what he was pointing back to was the basic point, which is the premise that the war on poverty was a failure. And the report cites over and over studies that he claims shows that federal anti-poverty programs have not worked. And that's actually blatantly false. I mean, if we look at the history of the war on poverty, even many of the economists that he cites in that study have come back and said, look, he's been misinterpreting our evidence and our studies. The fact is that poverty rates in the United States declined from 26% in 1967 to 15% in 2012. And we have to remember the context. 1967 was a relatively good time for the American economy. 2012, we were still recovering from the second biggest recession in the 20th century. So to compare those and say that there hasn't been an impact on poverty is simply wrong. And you can only arrive at that conclusion if you really misinterpret the evidence, which he was doing in that report. So I think it is important to actually focus on what he's actually saying and not trying to misinterpret what he's saying. He is saying that these have been a failure.
Well, let's talk about the war on poverty because it was the 50th anniversary, I think, not so long ago of that effort. And we've heard a lot about it in the last month or two, where people have been talking, you know, this is what the impact was. And it has quickly, very quickly, I think, turned into sort of this political football where the division seemed to be pretty stark. On the one side, you've got folks like Representative Ryan who say it's been a failure. On the other side, other people are saying, wait, not so fast. You know, we need to take another look at this. It has been successful, maybe not in winning the war, but certainly in winning some of the battles. If you could, for a second, tell us how you were citing some figures there. Talk about that so-called war on poverty and what you see as the successes and failures.
Right. Well, I think the biggest successes of the war on poverty actually come in federal funding that was not specifically tied to sort of means-tested programs. It was perhaps the single most successful programs that come out of the war on poverty are actually Medicare and Medicaid, which provided subsidized, often free health care for the poor and the elderly. They had a tremendous impact on poverty rates, particularly in the late 1960s. Another important aspect of the war on poverty that was tremendously successful was increased federal investment for housing, for education, things like health care, again, like Medicare and Medicaid. And these actually had a double impact. On one hand, they alleviated some of the effects of poverty. They actually benefited middle-class Americans much more than poor Americans. But the impact that it had on poverty also came in the fact that they provided jobs for the urban poor. So in the health sector, which is has been the fastest-growing employment sector in the country since the 1960s, in education, in housing. Importantly, another added effect was the unionization of these jobs in the 1970s and 80s. And I think when we look at this, we have to actually also turn back to the fact that these are actually the programs that that Ryan is talking about cutting. He's saying these things don't work. We need to cut these things. And they actually are having a tremendous impact and had a tremendous impact on alleviating the effects of poverty. Have they eliminated poverty? No. We still have poverty. But to take that and to argue that this has been a complete failure, I think, is disingenuous.
And I'm not sure how to articulate this myself, but when he says, you know, we've got generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and culture of work, it seems to me that he's saying that, and I'm not sure what documentation he might be using to back that up. But on the one hand, they're, you know, he's saying they're not thinking about learning the value and culture of work. On the other hand, it seems as though some of those job efforts to bring jobs to those areas, that, whether it's the inner city or wherever poor people might be, those efforts just aren't there to the extent that they may have been.
Right. I mean, I think Representative Moore was absolutely correct to point to this being it is a cultural problem, but it's a cultural problem that we all share. I mean, we are in a shared culture that is not investing in inner cities, is not investing in the transportation and housing programs that would allow people who are the urban poor to move out of these cities. And I think it's also important to keep in mind that this is a problem that affects not just the inner city poor, but also the rural poor. And in that sense, I think we do get a degree to which I think Representative Boxer was correct to point to the racial overtones of this, that when he's talking about inner city being, you know, equating poverty with inner cities, we also have rural poverty, and it's largely white. And so when you single that out, I think there is a racial implication. But the way in which I think it's important to point to the structural causes behind these inequalities is something that's missed when we focus on the cultural problem.
We're going to be taking a break right now, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion with William Jones, a professor of history at the UW-Madison. His work is on race, class, and employment. He is the author of The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights.
And we want to hear from you on this. What do you see as the primary cause of poverty in inner cities and elsewhere, and what's your reaction to Representative Ryan's comments? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Hi, I'm Gene Purcell, and this is Central Time. We're talking with William Jones, professor of history at the UW-Madison. His work focuses on race, class, and work, and he is the author of The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights.
And you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Are there barriers separating you from a well-paying job? And what do you make of Paul Ryan's recent comments about poverty and a lack of a culture of work in inner cities? You can also tweet us at CentralTimeWPR.
So before the break, we were talking a little bit about the war on poverty and some of what you saw as the successes of it. And as I was listening to that conversation, it struck me that in addition to these particular comments and that Representative Ryan made, there's also been this larger conversation that has been going on for the past couple of years about the whole notion and the whole idea of income inequality in the United States, the fact that the 1% seems to be getting smaller, and there's that middle class seems to be shrinking somewhere. And I'm wondering how that discussion plays into some of these other issues that we're talking about here, or does it?
Well, I think it does, because I think as a nation, we're often reluctant, I think, to think about sort of structural barriers to equality. We think of this as a nation where anybody, if they work hard, they can get ahead. And the fact is that increasingly since the 1960s, that has not been the case. We've seen these rising levels of income inequality. We've seen declining levels of social mobility. So if you look at advanced industrialized countries, the United States ranks the lowest, second only to Great Britain, in terms of if somebody's born poor, are they likely to die poor? There's sort of levels of income mobility. The fact remains that we live in a society where it's actually very difficult for people to change their class status. And that goes against everything that we're taught about in this, that we believe in this country. And I think Ryan is not alone in sort of looking for solutions for this or answers to this.
And so when we hear the idea that what people need to do is have the right attitude and go out and get a job and sort of pull themselves up by the bootstraps, it's not always quite that simple.
Right. And there's actually a very long history of people ascribing poverty, explaining poverty through the behavior of the poor. And it's interesting that there's a pattern of scholars actually studying the behavior of the poor and finding that the poor, poor people don't always do things that are in their best interest. So Oscar Lewis, for example, back in the 50s, did a number of studies, and he found that poor people, sometimes they do things that help to keep them in poverty. But he was very clear to say, this isn't why they're poor. These are behaviors that come from being poor, but it doesn't keep them poor. And it's not the solution to poverty. But he was very quickly interpreted as saying the culture of poverty is what causes poverty. Representative Ryan actually did the same thing with a study by Robert Putnam that he cited at the beginning of the quote that you played. He said he referred to Bob Putnam at Harvard, who has done a study finding that poor children tend to have lack of connections to things like families and churches, other community institutions. Putnam didn't say this was causing them to be poor, but Ryan interprets this as the cause of poverty, not an outgrowth of poverty.
Let's go to the phones right now. We've got some listeners who would like to join in, and Mark starts us off, and Mark is in Cambridge. Hi.
Hi there. I've been listening to what he says, and there's quite a bit of truth to what he says. But what's happened in this country is that we've at times replaced entitlement with enablement. And the other problem is that we've removed the lower rungs to the ladders of opportunity. There's an exodus of industrial opportunities, work industrial opportunities, everywhere in the state, particularly in the inner cities. And the faces of those people, when you drive down through those areas, the faces are faces of people that don't know opportunity because there is none.
Mark, let's leave it right there and get a reaction from our guest, William Jones. Two issues there. The idea that Mark brings up of entitlement versus enablement, that is one that you hear an awful lot about, And in your mind, how do you differentiate those? And what are we actually looking at these days? I mean, are we entitling or are we enabling? Or is it a lot more difficult to define than that?
Well, I think, often when the word entitlement is used, it's sort of the concept that people feel they have, they're entitled to certain benefits from society. I think we do live to a certain extent in a society that associates certain benefits with citizenship. People expect to have access to education, to decent education. Paul Ryan himself is somebody who has benefited from the Social Security program that is designed to entitle people with a certain cushion in hard times. And I think many of us expect those things to be there when we fall on hard times. I think the caller really points to an important issue of, you know, is the problem that people aren't looking for opportunities, or do they not have access to those opportunities? If we look at Milwaukee, for example, Milwaukee is a city that African Americans moved into in large numbers because there were these manufacturing jobs. In the 1970s, Milwaukee had very low levels of unemployment. The black communities in particular were disproportionately wealthy and prosperous if you compare Milwaukee to other cities in the country. But those jobs disappeared, and they moved to the suburbs, and they moved overseas. And the question is whether people have the ability to find the jobs that have moved. Do people have the ability to move out of the inner city or travel out of the inner city for work? And I think those are the barriers that we need to be looking at.
Let's go to Ed right now, and Ed joins us from Four Corners. Hi, Ed.
Yes, hello. I was born and raised in Milwaukee, and my mother and my brother, they have 50 years of continuous teaching in the Milwaukee public school system. And I do sympathize, understand where the caller is coming from. I remember growing up as a kid in the 70s, and the inner city seemed to be much more vital than it is today, and American Motors Corporation plant and those jobs just don't seem to be there. But my question is, to Paul Ryan's point, since 1965 and the establishment of the Department of Education and then the forced integration of the school system in the early 70s, we now have an urban school system which is predominantly minority. And I'm just asking the question, in terms of test scores and graduation rates for minority students, have we seen improvements? And how does he explain the racially segregated schools despite our efforts at integration?
All right. William Jones, what role does education play in this? Because that's something we hear an awful lot about, and certainly schools in Milwaukee, public schools anyway, are mightily challenged to have significant graduation rates.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really critical part of this puzzle, and one of the factors that we should consider is the way in which education and school funding and school attendance is determined by residential patterns. The Milwaukee metropolitan area is the most racially segregated metropolitan area in the country. And that's why we have a concentration of African Americans in inner city schools that are dependent on a tax base that's declining.
We've only got about 30 seconds or so left here, but I want to ask, you know, this so quickly seems to turn into an ideological debate, mm-hmm. at least when it gets into the political sphere. Are we going to be able to get beyond that anytime soon?
Well, I think the one benefit or one bright side that we can take from all of this is that we have a conversation about poverty, which we really haven't had a serious conversation about poverty in decades. And I credit Paul Ryan with bringing us back to that conversation, and I hope it continues. And I think it's important to take the evidence seriously and really look carefully at these issues.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. William Jones is a professor of history at the UW-Madison. His work is on race, class, and employment. He is the author of The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights.